Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters. This is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Amy Verdun, who is the chair of the Political Science Department at the University of Victoria in British Columbia. Her books include European Responses to Globalization and Financial Market Integration, Globalization, Development and Integration, and her latest, Ruling Europe, The Politics of the Stability and Growth Pact. She is also co-editor of the Journal of Common Market Studies. Welcome to Background Briefing, Amy Verdun.
Hi, Ian. Thanks for having me.
And you're in Holland now on your way to Brussels. And I believe tomorrow there'll be a crisis meeting of the financial chiefs of the Group of Seven, which are Canada, United States, Japan, Britain, Germany, France, and Italy. And the Canadian finance minister, Jim Flaherty, has already suggested that this is an emergency effort to sort of finally get something done here in terms of this two-year-long crisis that the Germans seem incapable of getting their hands around. Already, Germany has said, because there's concern about the run on the banks in Spain, Germany's already said, well, it's up to Spain to ask for money, not for the rest of you. So can you explain what's happening with the German truculence here?
Yes, well, it's a very difficult situation. The European Union, as you know, is governed by member states who make decisions collectively. And the situation in the euro area over the past 2 years has brought to a height that we are clearly seeing a difficulty in governing the European Union. You point to Germany, and I think it's indeed true to say that the Germans are particularly concerned with the situation, and they also sit on the biggest wallet, so to say. So anything that has to be paid, most of it does come from Germany. The Germans have been concerned since the very first day that the single currency was created that there could be a moment where some of the participants in the single currency wouldn't be sufficiently financially solvent to look after their own fiscal house. And they had put rules in place in order to make sure that that would not happen. Their worries had been about countries in the south of Europe, so Italy, Spain, Greece, Portugal. And what we see in this period is that it has indeed been those countries that have been at the heart of the fiscal crisis in the European Union. So the Germans have been stressing that in order for money to be moved from the collection of European member states to countries that are in financial need, that stringent rules would have to be adhered to. So what we see now is negotiations about under what circumstances could deepening integration take place.
But in the meantime, there appears to be a run on the Spanish banks. They're all but insolvent. And as soon as weak euro states, their people start cashing in Spanish and Greek euros for German euros or switching to the pound, doesn't that have an alarming kind of echo of what happened in the 1920s?
It is indeed very worrying. One of the problems that we see coming up now with the euro area is that it is indeed very easy to move from, as you said, Spanish euros to German euros. As you know, they are exactly the same euros. They are like United States dollars are the same wherever you are in the world. So if a person in Spain, an investor or a consumer, is worried about the solvency of Spanish banks, in the modern time, it's extremely easy for that money just to move to another area where there are euros. So you don't even have to convert them into another currency. You just park them at another bank.
And that's happening. That's happening, right?
Pardon me?
That's happening on a growing scale. My understanding is that is
indeed happening on the growing scale. And so one of the responses the European leaders are talking about today, or have been speaking about today in all secrecy, but it's leaked to the news here as I was watching the evening news here in the Netherlands, is that they're talking about what they call a banking union. A banking union would be a union in which the European Union member states guarantee the savings of people who have savings account or current accounts in any of the banks of the European euro area, most likely it's the euro area, so that people wouldn't have the incentive to move to another bank in the eurozone because they're worried about a run on the banks.
So again, though, Amy Verdun, who is the chair of the Political Science Department at the University of Victoria in British Columbia, and she's also the co-editor of the Journal of Common Market Studies, and we're talking to Amy in the Netherlands. Again, though, Robert Zoellick, the head of the IMF, has been warning Germany to deal with this. And obviously, we have a situation here where it's all sort of on Angela Merkel's shoulders, in effect, to make some kind of bold step that will finally, once and for all, stop this endless crisis. And the real question is she capable of being a statesman? Clearly, she's a very good politician in terms of coalition governance. But this is a moment that at least people on the outside are saying, and I imagine, you know, the subtext here in the United States is, if the euro goes under, it's going to affect our elections here and the fate of the re-election of Obama. So there's a great deal of concern on this side that Merkel has yet to get her act together. And we're asking her to be more of a statesman and less of a politician. What's your understanding of the situation?
Yeah, I think it's a very interesting period. As I mentioned when I started off, Germany has been holding the key to this all along. But it's not, I wouldn't say it's totally fair to say that it's Germany's fault or Germany's concern not to be able to solve this. Because what the Germans will need to do is build a coalition with the other EU member states and agree to the conditions under which they're willing to help. So I mentioned a moment ago about the banking union. That would be to guarantee the savings and checking account, the current account of all the savers in the various Euro member states. But clearly a guarantee means that somebody's going to ultimately be responsible for backing that up. A year and a half ago, Ireland backed up the savings of the Irish citizens and who held money in Ireland. Lots of UK people came over to Ireland and parked their money there, and at some point the Irish government wasn't able to sort of secure it with the amount of money that they needed to secure that. So it's not a matter of only being a good statesman, it's also having the political will, not just from one leader, but also its population and the wider EU member state populations to back that up with rules and common governance.
Well, George Soros, who of course has made a considerable amount of money out of trading currencies, etc., and one could argue whether or not that's a particularly useful activity, but he has been concerned for some time that the inability of the European leaders to deal with this crisis. He's talking about a new kind of German empire, if you will, in Northern Europe, and a kind of division between North and South. To some extent, the debate has already been somewhat racialized, hasn't it? My understanding is that most Germans consider that the Greeks and the Italians and the Spanish don't work as hard, don't pay taxes, and it's their problem, and why should we bail them out? And that is, again, what my understanding of essentially the political problem is here, that Merkel has a tough time persuading her very truculent citizens that they should pony up any more money.
Yes, that has indeed been the problem. I'm not sure that all German citizens are quite so skeptical. There has been quite a bit of populist rhetoric going back and forth. Earlier in the year, we heard people in Germany say that, you know, the Greeks were lazy and so on. And then very quickly, a report came out showing that the Germans retire earlier than the Greeks and they have more holidays than the Greeks. So there's been a lot of political rhetoric that's been bounced back and forth. But I think what the Germans, maybe more than others in the European Union, need to come to terms with is the question of whether at this intersection of history one wants to move forward and move back. The current status quo is not a status quo. It won't be maintainable for very much longer. And it occurs to me and to quite a number of observers that Europe will need to now either integrate more deeply or run the risk of there being a breakup of some kind. Now, a breakup is not attractive to anybody. I haven't heard any advocates saying that that would be something that anybody would want particularly. It's more that the difficulty of agreeing to deeper union is that one is having to be willing to pay the price for that. So in normal language, in the United States or Canada, there is a transfer of the states or the provinces that aren't doing so well, and that transfer comes in a form of funds from the federal level to those states in the interest of having a strong union. And the European Union is now embarking on that very exercise, like how much are they willing to keep this together, coughing up some of the resources, but then also having to make rules In the United States, you know, states can't run a deficit. They're supposed to be in balanced budgets. The European Union in December agreed to do something very similar. They've asked all the member states of the European Union, except for the United Kingdom and Czech Republic, who weren't willing to participate. But all the others have signed a treaty in which they are going to put a balanced budget arrangement in their constitution. So they've made these steps, but we're not exactly completely there, and that's why we have the difficulties at the current time.
And again, I'm speaking with Amy Verdun, who's the chair of the Political Science Department at the University of Victoria in British Columbia. She's in Holland as we speak, on the way to Brussels. And just today, the finance chiefs of the group of seven nations, including the United States, Canada, Japan, Britain, Germany, France, and Italy, have said that they're going to hold talks on the Eurozone debt crisis on Tuesday. And the Canadian Finance Minister Jim Flaherty has gone public in saying that the real concern right now is Europe, of course, the weakness of some of the banks in Europe, the fact that they're undercapitalized, the fact that other European countries in the Eurozone have not taken sufficient action yet to address those issues of undercapitalization of banks and building an adequate firewall, of course, referring to Spain. Are you confident that there will be sufficient action in terms of a firewall? That's, again, we've had this discussion for 2 years now.
Yes, I think there is still the political will amongst the leaders to move ahead. It's just a very difficult constellation of actors with not only Germany, as we've discussed, but also a new French president who has been emphasizing the need for growth. He's been having a difficulty with the notion of austerity, which has been central to the idea of spending more money on these countries. It also meant making sure that they are cutting back on excessive expenses. So there's been a change over there that's made for some setbacks in collective European governance. And the other part that's making a lot of the leaders very concerned is that the Greek government, the Greek electorate is going to go to the elections on the 17th of June. And if a strong anti-austerity political party constellation will be voted into power there, there's also concerns about what that might mean. So the temperature is up, if you like, and this is the heat is on for the coming 2 weeks to sort of come to a good resolution.
So do you think there will be a resolution before the next G20 summit, which is in Mexico? I mean, again, there's the feeling that you can't, surely we can't keep kicking the can down the road, can we?
Yes, I mean, it's very difficult from as an outsider to see exactly how much more it will take for them to negotiate a deal, but I know they've been working behind the scenes on picking up an arrangement that would try to solve this matter, as I mentioned, the banking union, and maybe they're even talking once again about euro bonds, which is an arrangement whereby there wouldn't be bonds issued in nation states, but in euro area, so like a treasury bond, but then a treasury bill, but then for the euro area, that might also be a way to offset some of the problems that Spain and Italy and Greece have had in trying to finance their sovereign debt. But again, those are things that are being discussed, and in order to make those decisions, other governance arrangements have to be made, and they're complicated and they take time. It's very unfortunate that way.
Well, my understanding is that in their last meeting between Hollande and Merkel, Hollande did want, he was pushing for the euro bonds, and but the German finance minister shot it down. So again, you see, you know, I'm certainly not beating up on the Germans, but again, it always feels like at the end of the day, they're the ones that hold the cards.
Well, I agree. I think the Germans now are the strongest player in the European Union context. So they have an ultimate say, and they can also stop things if they're not yet convinced that the deal is sufficiently in line with what they feel is appropriate. Angela Merkel did say, and it was reported in the Financial Times last week, that she would be willing to consider Eurobonds provided it comes together with a treaty change and some arrangements that nation states would have to agree to keep their budgetary deficit and public debt under control to a larger extent, except supervision from European institutions, the European Commission on sort of public finance in nation states. So it's kind of a tit for tat, right? If one wants to have German money guarantee the expenditures of some of these nation states, then it may require that they accept some supervision from others on their day-to-day budgetary and fiscal matters, and I think that's the trade-off.
So what's your sense then, being in Europe, Amy Verdun, about, you mentioned the Greek elections coming up and the likelihood that they would vote in an anti-austerity government, who've already laid down their marker saying that they're going to repudiate all of the previous deals. So that's even got officials like the Chinese are concerned of Greece defaulting from the euro. Some people have actually argued that another way out of this would be for the Germans to withdraw from the euro. Of course, that's not politically likely, right?
No, I don't think at all. In fact, I don't even think the Greeks are going to necessarily vote for parties that are being very anti-austerity. I think in the last elections, when they voted for parties that weren't going to support these plans, it was very much a vote of severe discontent, of frustration, of irritation of the period that had gone before them. Since that election has taken place, they have not been able to form a government, and therefore they're going back to the polls. And in the last couple of weeks, it's been made very clear that one of the results of a vote for sort of an anti-establishment party or parties that are against austerity measures and the agreements made by the European Union with Greece, which at the time included both the government and the opposition parties, if they're not willing to step forward with that, it could possibly mean a breakup of the euro area, that is, an exit by Greece. And if you look at the opinion polls, it's still 70-80% of the people still want to stay in the euro. So I really don't know whether the Greek citizens are going to vote for, you know, anti-establishment or sort of against austerity measures. It's hard for me to say that at this time. So we will just have to see what the Greeks do. The only concern simply is that one doesn't know this. And
sure.
If the outcome is the same, then there would be a concern about what that might mean for the period after 17th of June.
Well, I think just in closing, Amy Verdun, you're touching on what's really at issue here, surely, and that is confidence. And it's a somewhat emotional quotient, isn't it? I mean, there's a kind of a wild card here in this. And that's why apparently a lot of these foreign ministers, these finance ministers, including Canada's finance minister, are sounding the alarm, because even though there hasn't really been a full-scale run on the banks in Spain, there could be. And, you know, irrationality can take over, can't it, at any moment. That's where we stand. They're talking about a firewall. They're talking about, you know, stopping the bleeding, if you will. But there's also the very real possibility of a wild card erupting, surely. Particularly,
absolutely. You know. This is exactly the reason why the G7 is getting involved, and it's not merely a matter of the euro area leaders. It is something that is quite different from what would have been the case, you know, during the Depression in the 1920s and 1930s. Because at that time, it wasn't that easy to press on your computer a button so that your money just moved from here to there. And of course, that is a different circumstance from what would have been the case years ago. And because everybody is so connected and globalization has taken on forms that everybody can talk to everybody in the speed of lightning, there are dynamics that are beyond the reason and rationale of what could be possible, but it could just suddenly spark a panic. So I think that trust matter is indeed a key to why some of these issues are quite a bit more worrying than simply the economic fundamentals.
Well, I thank you so much for joining us here today from Holland, Amy Verdun.
Thanks, Martin, for inviting me to the program.
Again, I've been speaking with Amy Verdun, who's the chair of the Political Science Department at the University of Victoria in British Columbia. Her books include European Response to Globalization and Financial Market Integration, Globalization, Development and Integration, and her latest, Ruling Europe, The Politics of the Stability and Growth Pact. And she's also co-editor of the Journal of Common Market Studies. We're going to take a brief station break and we'll be back talking with the Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist and author, Chris Hedges.
They want you lost in your own fear. No compass, find your way out. A troglodyte, a derelict barn campaign. Pretend the filthy red.